Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
There are days like today where I am just too busy to get outside and go feed myself. And that's where DoorDash comes in. It's super convenient and they bring the food to me. Also, I don't like paying delivery fees. So I have DashPass. DashPass is an exclusive membership from DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts, all for only $9.99 a month. DashPass actually pays for itself in two orders on average. DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites. Open the door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. Sign up for DashPass today only on DoorDash and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change, terms apply. How are you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing fine. We have a update in the news about Lee Boyd Malvo, the DC sniper case. He was the younger of the two. He was actually a minor at the time. And he's in the news again because they're talking about a resentencing for him because, as we've talked about many times in the past, the Supreme Court has deemed sentencing minors to life behind bars unconstitutional. Now, that said, this is more of a formality or just the legal system going through its motions because Malvo's being sentenced separately for each one of the shootings. So instead of his other sentence, he's going to be resentenced and then given an amount of years for each of these shootings. And again, he'll probably end up staying behind bars for the rest of his life. But because of the technicalities of our legal system, they have to resentence him. But of course, this is making the news because it's upsetting a lot of people who think he's got a chance that he might be let out. But the chances of that, I think, are slim to none.
Well, I have another update. For those of you that remember our episode on the death of Ellen Greenberg, well, that was a very frustrating case because initially it was ruled a homicide by the medical examiner. And then that was changed to suicide because they couldn't find any signs of forced entry. And the only fingerprints they found on the knife were Ellen's. Well, the news has hit that the Chester County District Attorney's Office is now going to be taking another look at it. So we don't know where it's going to end up, but just the fact that they're going to take another look due to probably pressure from the family and the public, I mean, that's all we can hope for at this point.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk, It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So Aaron, tonight's case is kind of a weird one. When I first started reading about it, I was a bit shocked, or at least surprised by some of the outcomes here. So if it surprises me, then I think it might surprise some of our listeners too. So what are we talking about tonight?
Tonight we're talking about the murder of Tina Marcotte in June of 1994 in Rapid City, South Dakota.
Now, Tina worked at a lumber grader at Black Hills Molding Company. It was founded back in 1987. Fabricated wood and millwork. Black Hills Molding has since closed its doors, but they were in business for a while. Tina was born in Massachusetts to her father, Clarence Hartz, and mother, Joyce Hartz. She lived in Manchester, New Hampshire, for the majority of her life. She had a couple kids, two daughters. She'd been living with her long-term boyfriend, Patrick Gleason. They had shared space together for over 11 years.
Now, he also worked at Black Hills Molding. There's actually an Unsolved Mysteries on this case. And if you love Unsolved Mysteries, it's a pretty good little episode. Now, let's go to the night in question, Justin. Tina was working, like you said, at Black Hills Molding. And around 12:36 in the morning, Vicky Riddle, a friend of hers, got a call from Tina. So this woke her up and she's pretty groggy. But Tina's telling her, my shift's over, but I can't use my car. It's got a flat. And so her friend Vicky is saying, well, I can come get you. But then all of a sudden, Tina's like, hold on a second, because there's a car coming up. So she says, hold on. And she goes out and she talks to whoever it is. And then she gets back on the phone and says, hey, don't worry about giving me a ride. Tom's here. And so her friend Vicky's like, who's Tom? And she says, oh, you know, the Tom that used to work here.
But Vicky, her friend, is half asleep and just happy that she doesn't have to get in her car and go pick up her friend, right?
Well, but also she's very concerned. They're really good friends. So hearing that she's going to be okay, that she's got a ride, that's a relief. But Tina didn't come home. And Patrick Gleason, her boyfriend, well, he's like, she would have let me know if something was happening. But the fact that she didn't means this isn't good. And he thought, well, maybe she had gone out for a beer. That was normal. But to not return home at all? No. There's something wrong here.
And no phone call, nothing. I realized that back then there weren't cell phones, but we had answering machines. And I'm sure if the phone rang in the middle of the night, he would have heard it and answered. But no phone call, nothing.
So Patrick goes to their place of work and finds her car there. It's locked and he sees it has a flat tire. Now, meanwhile, Vicky called up Tom because there was only one Tom she could think of that used to work there. And that was Tom Keeter. But Tom said, I didn't give her a ride. But Tom, he shows back up because he and Patrick go to Vicky's house. They want to know what she knows. Have you heard anything? Well, she's telling them about getting the call from Tina. And Tom starts saying, were you drunk or were you tired? Maybe you didn't hear the name right, because she had brought up the story of Tom, right? Tom showed up to give her a ride. Tom's saying that's not true. But Vicky is very certain that it was a Tom that used to work there and saying, that's the only Tom I know of is you that used to work with us. And she said that Tom didn't seem to be very comfortable with this line of questioning. Then Patrick looked over at Tom and his first thought was, wait a minute, have you been having an affair with Tina? Tom says, no, man, no. But Patrick, and this is covered in that episode I was telling you about, Patrick was very leery of this because he said, that's not the way Tom is. If Tom was accused of something that he didn't do, it would tick him off. He'd probably start a fight. But in this instance, he said, Tom just denied it.
He was passive. When somebody's acting out of character, it gives you a red flag.
Then Tom says, you know what? Let's go to the police station. We'll file a missing persons report. So they go there and they file this report. And the question again comes up about, did Tom give her a ride? And he says, you know what? I take a lie detector test to prove that I didn't give her a ride. Now, you can imagine, Justin, the only information they have is that Tina was getting off work. She couldn't drive her car because it had a flat. And so she contacted her friend Vicky. And then supposedly she was offered a ride by Tom, who everyone is assuming is Tom Keeter. The police, well, they're going to follow up and they want to talk to Tom Keeter. So they have him give him a rundown of what happened that night. So he said, well, I was actually playing softball the night that Tina went missing. And he said, I dropped a friend of mine off at his place at about 11 that night, but then my vehicle broke down. He said it broke down behind the Super Duper, which is on East St. Patrick Street. He said he then had to fix his car, which was a bronze 1975 Pontiac Le Mans sedan. And this all happened under a streetlight. He said the issue was with the carburetor, but no one saw him working on the car. And he never called his wife to explain that he was going to be home late.
Which I can buy his story up until this point. I don't know if random passerbyers or people in the area are going to notice somebody working on the car for a bit. How is he going to tell his wife? Is he going to go to a payphone? He's just going to get home when he gets home.
I agree. That makes sense to me. But it does get stranger because when he gets home at 3:30 in the morning, his wife Nancy is there to greet him. But he doesn't really make any small talk or anything. He heads right to the laundry room so he can wash his clothing, including his shoelaces. So we're talking about his softball uniform and his shoelaces. He claimed that he got oil all over himself while he was working on the car.
Well, Aaron, if you don't treat the stain immediately, it could set.
Yeah.
I do my laundry at 3:30 in the morning all the time. Come on.
So after the talk with the police, Tom went home. Then Tom and his family went for a drive and they got back home around 3 p.m. When they got back, his wife Nancy had gotten a call from Vicky Riddle, who said she was scared. And Patrick Gleason, Tina's boyfriend, got on the call and told Nancy to ask Tom about drugs. So again, it feels like there are a lot of accusations flying around and Tom's still in the spotlight.
And the police, they're going to go find Tina's car. And when they look at that flat tire, it's pretty apparent that somebody has slashed it or jabbed it with a knife. This wasn't just she got a nail in her tire or some random road hazard. Somebody intentionally flattened her tire.
The Rapid City police also go to the Keeter's home and they request that the clothes that Tom was wearing the night that Tina disappeared be brought to them. They also want Nancy to come to the station for questioning, but Nancy doesn't want to help them out with these requests. But, you know, she does, because what is she going to do? All we know is that Nancy believes in her husband. She thinks that Tom has nothing to do with what happened with Tina, which at this point, all we know is Tina's missing.
And all Nancy, his wife, knows is that he came home late. He had some car trouble. So that's the information she's working off of.
Well, the next step for the police is they have Tom's car towed away. They're going to be going over the vehicle to see if they can find any evidence. And so Nancy, of course, is very concerned, and Tom tries to downplay everything, saying, hey, look, someone must be trying to frame me, and they're doing a good job of it. In other words, don't look at me. I've got nothing to do with this, but someone's gone to some trouble to make it look like I did.
During this investigation, Tom and Nancy are going on family vacations. They're going out of town. But Nancy recalls that Tom received a phone call on the 26th at around 5 p.m. and was noticeably quiet for the remainder of the night. She said that before she went to bed, he again stated that he was being framed and he didn't know why. He didn't know what was going on. And he said that he had not done anything.
The police continue to try and get information out of Tom. And the next time they speak with him, they actually ask him if he had been involved with Tina in some sort of romantic affair. Tom denied this. But you can see how the police are starting to put together a theory that Tom must have caused her tire to go flat and then waited for her to get off work and then just happened to show up when she needed a ride. What's he doing out after midnight like that? He just happens to be there to rescue her and take her home, or at least that was the idea. But then she goes missing. And in their minds, they're thinking, yeah, he planned all this and he just didn't have the ability to plan that Tina would have been on the phone when he showed up.
And I think that they keep asking about an affair or a relationship because they're trying to catch him in a lie or trip him up in his story, but he's just denying everything.
Well, the other thing I think is one of their theories, and maybe the main theory, is that he tried to make a move on her and that she rejected him, and that's why she went missing. And so they're trying to get him to talk about her, but he's not cooperating very much.
The police will go on to talk to Tom's coworkers and bosses.
Yeah, they said that he, well, according to their quotes, didn't play well with others. They thought he was an angry person and had a dark side. So add this to their theories and also add this to the fact that he doesn't have a very good alibi. Think about this. If Tina went off with some Tom at 12:36 in the morning, they would like to know where Tom Keeter was between 12:30 and 3:30, which would be the hours that he's essentially unaccounted for. They're calling it the missing 3 hours.
These are the hours he claims his car was having carburetor trouble and he was on the street working on it, but nobody's seen him there and he has no way of proving he was there or that he had carburetor trouble.
Despite these witnesses telling police that Tom didn't play well with others, that he was angry, his former supervisor said he didn't seem like the kind of person who could take someone's life, because that's the concern here. If Tina's been missing over these last so many days, she's not shown up and she was given a ride, that doesn't look good. So what do we know about Tom's past, Justin?
Well, he had been charged with burglary as a teenager and was once convicted of simple assault. Now, when you're a teenager, you can get into some trouble. This doesn't stand out to me exactly as evidence that he is capable of murder, but he did have a history of drug and alcohol abuse. When Nancy was asked if there'd been any cases of domestic violence, she stated that there had not been any. She added that Tom had pushed her on occasion when he was struggling with his drinking, but she said nothing out of the ordinary or nothing that would constitute assault to her.
Now, before we go on, Nancy obviously is defending her husband, and that's another thing that the police are inquiring neighbors about, other witnesses. They want to know if anyone has heard or seen anything that would suggest that Tom was interested in Tina, but it really seemed like Tom was into his wife. So they couldn't find anybody to give them any information other than, oh, he loved his wife.
But they're questioning him. They're questioning all of his colleagues. They're questioning his wife. They've impounded his car. He's starting to, if he hadn't already, he's starting to get the hint that the focus is definitely on him.
June 28th, 1994. Tom left his home at 6:30 in the morning. He was being driven to work by the police because, well, they were still using his car. They were searching it for evidence. And according to Nancy, she spoke with her husband that morning, and the only thing that she could remember that he said to her was, I love you too. But just a couple of hours later, Tom was found dead. Now, what happened was some of his coworkers at Forest Products, where he worked, this is a wood processing plant, they found a body sticking out from under a forklift in the plant's yard. And when they were checking, it appeared to be the body of Tom Keeter. He had been crushed by the forklift.
And this is a really weird scene. It's almost like cartoonish. You see these legs out from underneath this forklift. So it's not what you would expect from an accident, because it literally looks like somebody laid down and the forklift just drove over them and on top of them. So of course, the police are going to assume suicide, but Tom's wife and people that support him, they're going to look at this and think this is foul play.
Yeah, it's one of those situations, Justin, where depending on what road you're on, if you're on the road to proving that Tom made Tina disappear, this looks like a suicide, right? Because the forklift, you know, was loaded up with a ton of timber and set on what, like a path where it could easily roll forward. If Tom loaded it up, started it up, and then jumped out and ran in front of it and just laid down on the ground, then he would be directly in its path. They also say that there's no sign of a struggle there, no drag marks. Anything that would suggest that he was somehow injured and put in that position, all they could see was this machine, it crushed him. And according to their theory, Tom set this whole thing up. But of course, Nancy, she believes that someone must have knocked him unconscious and then used the forklift to crush him. And she doesn't stop with the theory either. She gets help. She hires an attorney, and she also gets a private investigator. The private investigator's name is John Kolbach. And he has an interesting question. He asked, is it truly reasonably within the realm of believability that anyone under any circumstances would choose this type of excruciating death?
It's not likely. I'm sure the percentile of people who have taken their own life crushed by a forklift is never. This might be the only time somebody's intentionally done it with a forklift, but I'm trying to just imagine murdering somebody in this way. If you're going to take somebody's life, there's far easier ways than with a forklift. I'm sure that Kolbach could say, if you're going to take your own life, there's far easier ways than with a forklift. But if this is suicide, this is the tools that Tom had. This is what he came up with.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
In other words, you agree with the police.
Yeah, I do. Because if somebody had killed Tom, which again, there is motive for someone to kill Tom, because Tina's boyfriend and Tina's family think Tom has done something with Tina. So they all have a motive to do harm to Tom. But for them to know that he's going to be at work at this time and be able to knock him unconscious without leaving any mark and then put him in the way of a forklift, that's a lot of planning too. So as the investigator's quote goes, is it truly reasonable within the realm of believability that anyone under any circumstances would choose this type of execution? No, it's not. You can flip that whole sentence around. No one would murder somebody this way.
Well, I believe the police come up with a good theory, a good working theory as to why someone would take their lives in this manner. And we'll get to that in a minute. But, you know, his wife, Nancy, she is fully behind her husband. Now he's dead. So this is devastating to her and their children. She goes on to say, I really believe that Vicki Riddle, who was Tina's friend, must have misheard her on the phone. Tom, who used to work here. No, she doesn't believe that. She thinks she heard the wrong name. And she doesn't have an answer as to why no eyewitness saw Tom working on his car at the side of the road underneath that streetlight. It is early in the morning, but surely someone must have seen something, but no one did. And he was working on the car for a while, according to him. So after Tom died, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration fined Forest Products, where Tom worked, for $1,750 because they found that the parking brake on the forklift was inoperable. It was faulty. But of course, the police, they say, well, that forklift moves so slowly that there's no way he got run over by it unless he wanted that to happen.
I would just assume that if you were kneeling down underneath the load of timber, underneath the forks, you would be in a kneeling position, not in a flat position. If you were to get run over by this, it would crumple your body in an unnatural way. You wouldn't be lying flat. It just doesn't make sense.
Well, according to Nancy, he must have been disabled in some way, like knocked unconscious. And that's why it looked the way it did.
But there's no reports of any kind of evidence that he was bludgeoned, any kind of evidence of any marks on his body besides what he would have normally sustained from being run over by a forklift.
True, but it might be difficult to prove if you have one of these large tires running over your head, not to be gross. But the police did recreate this scenario, and they were able to show that you could move this forklift and then jump out, run in front of it, and lie down, and then it would run over you, albeit a bit slowly.
And forklifts are dangerous. Forklift accidents happen all the time. Just, they don't look like this in my mind.
The police, their theory is that Tom did this so that his family might actually get some benefits from his death. Because if he took his own life, as we've learned in other cases, well, police departments or insurance companies or just businesses in general, yeah, these things aren't paid out if you take your own life, typically. Now, I say typically because I'm not versed enough in this area to know if anyone allows for that. But typically, from what we've seen, no. It has to be a murder or an accidental death for there to be a payout. So Tom, knowing that the police were closing in on him, well, maybe this is what he thought he had to do. So I won't say I know for sure that he took his own life, but available evidence suggests that it's very possible and likely. So there was this idea, Justin, that if Tom was responsible for Tina's disappearance, that they might locate her by going where Tom went. And so they had witnesses coming forward, people calling in tips, and they would go to places where these leads took them, but nothing was really panning out. And they also got a tip from a psychic. Let's just say that didn't work out. We'll move on.
Oh, here we go. They didn't smell gas or lumber, fresh cut lumber or sea trees, forklift, but I don't know.
Now, nothing panned out from this psychic, but the police were reaching out to the public. They said, we need your help. Please look out for any of these items. There was a Walkman that Tina had with her, classic rock cassettes. I like that part, and her bag. So they were giving that information out in case someone saw something on the side of the road somewhere. And the CEO of Black Hills Molding, where Tina had worked, Gary Malams, he said, I think we all hoped she'd turn up somewhere alive. As the time dwindled, people's hopes started to dim a bit over time. And Justin, it was a bit of a wait, but on October 15th, 1995, she was discovered under a woodpile.
And where was that woodpile at again, Aaron?
Well, this is where Tom worked, at his workplace.
Yeah, I think that kind of seals the deal for me. Even if I can accept that no one saw him working on his car in the middle of the night, even if I can accept that he didn't call and let his wife know he was coming home late, all of his actions from the time he got home and going forward were all very suspect. And washing your clothes in the middle of the night, And why not just throw your shoelaces away and get new ones? I don't even know what the, I guess that might look too suspicious because why do you have new shoelaces on your shoes? But if you just wash your shoelaces, well, they still are the same worn shoelaces. It's tiny details like that that make him look very suspicious. And his story doesn't really add up. Tom, who used to work here, is picking me up. And that same Tom happens to have car trouble at the exact same time that Tina disappears and is ultimately murdered. Her body is found in a lumber pile where Tom had access to it.
Yeah, so let's talk about how she was found. There was an employee moving some boards at the back of the property, and they were using a forklift. Well, they lifted up this pile of wood, and some of the planks fell. So he stopped his forklift, got out, and was putting them back on when he saw a body. Now, by this point in time, it had been 16, 17 months, so Tina was badly decomposed at this point. But they have enough to work with, and there's an autopsy done, Justin. And they determine that Tina's death was caused by blunt force trauma to the upper left side of her skull. So the next step was to determine whether these remains were in fact Tina Marcotte's. And so they went through all of the items found near the body, including the clothing, and then the dental records.
And again, this whole time, Tom's wife is saying, Tom had nothing to do with this. Tina's friend is getting her statements wrong. They have nothing on Tom. She repeats that. They have nothing on Tom.
I think it's telling the way that she words that. I think it's very much, I don't want to think about this as being a possibility. And I won't. I really can't blame her.
My knee-jerk reaction is to be extremely frustrated with her comments and want to be like, I told you so. But this is how people respond when their loved one, their family member is accused of something so horrible that they cannot imagine them doing. And it might be obvious to the rest of us armchair detectives, but when you're in the thick of it, when you have emotional ties to this person, you're going to find every single way to justify, to use confirmation bias that this could not be the case. This is not who I married. This is not who I'm with.
Well, and Tom had been telling her that someone's framing me. Someone must be framing me. I had nothing to do with this. So when Tina's body is found at the back of the property where Tom worked, she can say he's being framed.
Somebody planted her body there. Yeah.
Before we go on, Justin, I mean, who would, can you even think of someone who would frame Tom Keeter for the murder of Tina Marcotte?
Well, we could go with Tina's boyfriend. If he thought that they were having an affair, that would be my first just random conclusion. I'm not saying I believe that. I'm not saying that's the case, but that would make the most sense.
I thought about that too. There's only one problem. We have Vicky Riddle, right? She got a call. Now, she was woken up, but her friend, Tina, told her, Tom's going to give me a ride home. Now, if her boyfriend, Patrick Gleason, had showed up, then she would have said, Patrick's here. But she didn't. She said, Tom. And when she was asked, Tom who? She said, the Tom that used to work here. That's pretty specific. And then you have Tom denying that happened over and over and over again.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
So for me, I don't know how you get a better case here than the one that the police have built up by doing all these interviews, right? And all those investigations.
And their theory is dead on. They check out her car. They see that the tire has been slashed. So this is intentional. Then he happens to roll up and offer her a ride, not realizing that she happened to be on the phone with her friend. So there is a witness.
Nancy was not about to change her mind, no matter what evidence came forth. And after Tom's death, she then fought to have the ruling that was done regarding the insurance reversed. She told them that this idea that Tom had taken his own life, that's wrong. She said the police should have investigated more. And she said, my family should be entitled to thousands of dollars in workers' compensation benefits. So she files an appeal with the State Division of Labor and Management because she's not happy with the forest products distributor, right? The company that her husband worked for, because they're not paying the compensation claim. And she also tells Pennington County that she's planning to sue them. Now, it takes, what, like 4 years, but eventually a judge rules that there's just not quite enough evidence to say that Tom had taken his own life.
This is the one that you have to wrap your legal head around. Tom is dead. He's found under a forklift. It's either an accident, foul play, or suicide. Now, we can all sit here and look at it, scratch our heads, and think, yeah, that absolutely looks like suicide. But can you prove, and this isn't a court of law where somebody is on trial for his death. This is, can you prove it to some insurance companies and to in a civil suit? The judge, he makes his ruling. I get it, but I think most people can look at this scenario, this scene, and understand what it truly was.
Tina was buried at Blossom Hill Cemetery in Concord, and Patrick Gleason, her boyfriend, the father of her children, died of a heart attack in 2015. And the thing is, Justin, he remained single up until the day he died. Now, credit to the authorities because they have a great case here that they've built up. Unfortunately, with Tom's death, what more could they do? Well, they investigated an additional 8 years, which to me says that they weren't in a rush to close the case. Now, we could side with Nancy and say, well, they weren't investigating enough, but they kept that file open for that long before they finally closed it.
There was no pressure there because the person who was the prime suspect is dead. They've exhausted most of the leads, but they're leaving it open in case there's something more that comes down the pipe, if another witness comes forward, anything like that. So I think, yeah. They did their due diligence here.
Now, one of Tina's daughters, Sherry, wrote a Facebook comment, okay? I find this interesting, and I'm just going to read what she wrote. She wrote, just to clarify, I am Tina's daughter. After we moved away from Rapid City, I got in contact with the detective that worked my mother's case once I was older and had questions. He had me and my father, Patrick, go to the police station where I live and give them our DNA to test it against the blood found on Tom's shoe. And it came back about 99% match and said if Tom was still alive, they would now have enough evidence to put him in prison for the rest of his life. Now, she has some more that she goes on to say, but Nancy would end up responding to her, Nancy Keeter, and I'll attempt her last name, Steinlich. She responded, the police don't have any blood evidence on anything, so I don't know why they would say that to you. If they did, it would have been brought up in court. R.I.P. Tina. Sherry responded, they do actually. They found blood on his sneaker. And this goes on. It becomes an argument.
And it would be brought up in court. Really? Would it? Maybe they found it after the hearings. Or maybe they just were like, if she's referring to the court where was he murdered or did he take his own life? Well, blood on his sneakers that belongs to someone else is inconsequential, actually, in that hearing and that decision. So, yeah, I think she's wrong, and I think Tina's daughter is absolutely correct.
Yeah, I don't honestly know what I think about this. Just, I can't speak on it because I don't know what detective really would tell her this. And even if they had this information that there was blood that they were able to test on Tom's shoe, well, why would Nancy believe that at that point? She'd already denied everything else leading up to it. I understand the difference between being an armchair detective, where you say this all makes sense, and then also looking at it from the standpoint of someone who loved Tom Keeter and would say, no, he was set up. But that's a lot of stuff to set up. And why would someone bother that much? How did they get it to where the victim would actually tell her friend on the phone that Tom was picking her up, giving her a ride? That's just
a lot of moving parts here.
Yes, a lot. All I can say is this is a case that hasn't worked out for anyone. Everyone lost in this case. You know, we go with Tina's, I would consider him her husband. You know, we're talking about Patrick Gleason, their kids, they've lost out. And then Tom Keeter's family, they've lost out. Because even if he did all this, I don't believe that they knew about it. I don't believe that at all. So there's just a lot of pain and suffering from this case. But again, this was an Unsolved Mysteries episode at one point. And if you just read the summary that a woman goes missing and then the person suspected in her disappearance is dead just days later from an apparent accident, I don't know what to say to that, Justin, except that's when you say, I need to know more.
You can't script this. And that Unsolved Mysteries, I think, is season 8, episode 7 with Robert Stack.
The great Robert Stack, right? Anyhow, if you have any thoughts on this case, be sure to share them with us. You can post to our Facebook, Twitter, what have you.
And Aaron and I are going to have an after show where we discuss a little bit more about this case. So check that out on Patreon.
Cool. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.